Blog Talk Radio.
Let's not stand on ceremony, mate. Let's start the show.
We would be honored.
Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson. That guy laughing in the background is John Nolan. We are the Punch Drunk Critics. How you doing, John?
What's up? What's good, up, man. I was so confused for a second there. I didn't know what if the wrong clip was playing because I actually haven't seen Trolls World Tour yet. But okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what you're in for. At least for a little while, anyway. I actually really liked the first Trolls. I really did. And I went back and I looked at our review from a few years ago, and it was John Armstrong who wrote it, actually. It wasn't either of us. And he gave it a positive as well. I was surprised by that. But I really did like it, and I was expecting quite a bit from this one, probably, I think. But I still felt like if Universal hadn't done what they did with Trolls World Tour, we probably wouldn't be talking about it this week. We probably would have skipped it, but this is a movie that has really kind of upended the entire Hollywood distribution system, which is a weird thing to say about Trolls World Tour, but because of, you know, the pandemic and everything, the theaters are shut down, and Universal was the first to make this move. They were the first out of the gate. MGM was first to move a major film. That was No Time to Die, but Universal was the first to say, we're going to take one of our biggest movies of the year and we're going to send it to streaming. We're going to send it to digital.
Right.
They were the first to do it. Others have followed suit since then. In fact, we can talk about how My Spy is going straight to digital now too. That's the Dave Bautista film that's been delayed over and over again for the last year. But Universal first with Trolls World Tour, and this was a big move, and it upset their owners, who, you know, always expect to have those big films in their theaters, even though all the theaters are closed. They were still upset about this move, and so this was Trolls ended up a really major film. Now, is it any good though? I mean, yeah,
well,
it's fine.
Before we even get to that, I mean, from as far as them being upset about, going home, it's kind of there's two sides to it that it there's no really good way to do it. You can either please the stockholders or you can please the viewers. Because I like a lot of these movies that have come out for $20, you know, Bloodshot, Harley Quinn, now Trolls World Tour. I would have easily paid the $20. And now this is obviously everybody can argue and they're absolutely right that it's cheaper to spend $20 for a rental at home than it is to have two people go to the movie theater. But the problem I have with it is $20 for a rental. If you were offering $20 to buy the movie, I would have bought all these right out. But I can't see myself spending $20 for a rental. I know it's a mental thing where I spend more when I go to the theater, but I still can't do it.
Yeah, and we kind of had this. This is a little bit inside baseball, but I don't give a shit, really. We had kind of sort of a discussion back and forth on our WAFCA page all week about, and it seemed
right.
like I was pretty much out on an island in this, which I don't mind being in an island against our WAFCA critics because they don't know anything anyway. But most of them don't. Some of them are fantastic. A lot of them aren't. But my point was my issue, because I had beef. I have beef with Universal over Trolls 2 as well. But my
mm-hmm.
beef was always that they weren't making the film available to everybody in our area. I got a link to it. I know a few other people did, but everyone should have got one.
Right.
I wasn't just looking out for myself. I thought that everyone should have gotten a link to Trolls, or at least everyone should have been offered the link to Trolls the same way we're offered to go to a screening. You don't have to go to the screening. You're offered to go to the screening. They should have offered all of us who would have normally gotten that invite a link to Trolls. And I think that would have been the way to do it, just to keep things normal. And everybody would have had the same opportunity. Instead, we got people complaining that they didn't get the link to Trolls. And I'm not going to pay $20 to see Trolls. And I ended up having to argue with people about whether or not they should pay $20 to rent Trolls. And I'm like, I don't give a shit whether you rent Trolls or not.
Right.
But I have to, like, argue that point. And I'm like, that's not what I'm in this conversation about. My thing is that I don't like you said, it's a mental thing for you, and I'm like, and I don't understand it, because we don't own the movies that we see in theaters either. Like, don't own those. So, like, why not feel like paying $20 to rent a movie for 2 days? You get to rent it for 2 days. You could have your kid, if you're a kid like I was growing up, you'd watch a movie 10 times over the course of 2 days.
Yeah.
But also,
well, I mean,
but
it,
also,
it all comes down to.
Also, from the studio perspective, and I'll finish up, and you can jump in. From the studio perspective, I mean, $20 is has to be considered fair, because there could be you're talking about a family. It might be a family of 3, 4, or 5 in the house, in which if they were to go to theater, they would have spent $40-$50 to go see mm-hmm. that movie. But now that family, and this is a family movie, they're paying $20 for the same number of people. If it's three people, they're spending $30 minimum, like probably more. So they're kind of undercutting themselves here with $20 price tag, which is always my thing about it. Now, if it's just me by myself and I paid $20 to see Trolls, I mean, you can argue that it's less, but I mean, most of the time when I've paid to go to the theaters, which is often, but it still comes pretty goddamn close to $20, whether I like it or not.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
So, to me, that price tag isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, if you go by yourself and get a small drink, you're at the $20 mark. But it's, I mean, this is what happens when the status quo starts to change, is you're in situations you've never been before, and you have no choice but to compare them to something you know. And what you know is that if you rent a movie, it shouldn't be as expensive as going to the movies. And $20 is really expensive to rent a movie. It's totally fair.
Because we're used to the like $4.99 rental. We think rental.
Oh yeah.
We think Blockbuster. I used to be able to rent a movie from Blockbuster for $4.99 or whatever it was. Or I can go to Redbox and rent a movie for $1. That's what we think of when we think of the word rental. But those aren't new movies, and this is a totally different situation. Those movies have had their theatrical run, their block, their whatever. They've had that already. This is a movie that hasn't.
It's totally different. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just a mental block that people, and that's why during these times of transition, there's a lot. I mean, I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but if you look back to somewhere else that something like this has happened, You know, it's always the same. People subconsciously have a block in their head about how it goes. I mean, I'm the first to admit it's more than fair what they're charging, especially for somebody like me. I've got a surround sound system and I've got a 65-inch TV and all that. Now,
yeah.
I get it. It's not exactly the same experience if you don't have that, but still, you're paying less than you would if you go by yourself and you have the comfort of your house. And it's, but at the same time, there is a mental, it's totally mental, it's totally subconscious, but it's something that people are, it's going to take a while for them to get over and get into.
Yeah.
And while it's happening, the studio will be looking at it from the other side and saying, wait, $20, we were getting $50 from this family. That's, you know, less than half. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of back and forth there.
Right. And, you know, and this is why theater exhibitors are worried, because, you know, you're breaking down that barrier, that mental barrier. So, you know, you're closing the theatrical window where there used to be 2 or 3 month gap in between a movie's theatrical release and the, you know, home release, and that's breaking away. But also, more importantly, like you said, the mental barrier for people, if they become accustomed to paying $20 for a movie, well, from home, well, then why go to the movie theater at all? You know, and that's what they're more scared of than anything else. And I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. I think when this whole thing is over, I think things slowly come back to normal.
Well,
and this thing only works for movies
normal.
Like those that don't cost, you know, $200 million. If it's a movie, it's like, that's why you're not going to see Wonder Woman or Black Widow or any of these, like, super big budget movies. You're not going to see them ever go to digital, because the theatrical is where the money is.
Right.
You know,
well,
if we'll ever see a $1 billion grosser on a movie that just goes straight to digital. Or, I mean, at least not in our lifetime. I don't think we'll see it. Maybe we'll see it in the future when digital becomes like the only way you might see that. But I don't think in our lifetime we see that happen.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a new normal when all this goes out. When all this blows over, it's not going to be the same theater business as it was before. I mean, we're already hearing the AMC's talking about bankruptcy. And what's going to happen? People will never stop going to the movie theaters. That's going to be – that's plain and simple. That's what it is. Even if it means that certain movie theaters exist to only show blockbuster movies, we're always going to have the movie theater because it's something that people like doing. I mean, sure, we like sitting in our house to watch things like Spencer Confidential or Six Underground. But when it comes to Avengers Endgame, we want to go out with our friends. We want to make a night of it. And they'll just have to I would be very surprised if I didn't see more niche theaters coming out, like Alamo Cinema and Draft House. More movie theaters are playing old classics that'll bring people out for events like Rocky Horror Picture Show type thing, situations. The days of 150 releases is over, I would say.
It's like saying the creation of HelloFresh is going to end the restaurant business. No, it's not. Say, well, but I can have restaurant quality food in my house in 20 minutes. Okay, but I still want to go out to eat.
Right. You still want
the
service.
It's sort of the same thing. It's the same thing. You can have – all these things are events for people. Like, I know when I go out – and, yeah, I see 200 movies a year or whatever. But when I go out, I still like to go to the movies. I like to go to the movies. It's fun. Going to the movies and being there in a crowd watching a movie – you know, it's just a different experience, you know, and people do these things as things to do. Not everybody likes to go to clubs or go to concerts. They like to do things that are, you know, a bit more easygoing,
right.
And movies will always be that way. I'm not one of those doom and gloom people that thinks the theatrical experience is going away. AMC may file for bankruptcy tomorrow, but AMC ain't going nowhere. They're an essential business. They're not going anywhere. They'll may have to consolidate. They may have to close some theaters, which hopefully they don't affect us here in DC too much, because we don't have that many. but they're not going anywhere. Some of these small boutique theaters that you know they might have to close after all this, and that would suck. But those are also the theaters that are doing new things, you know, and, you know, making the experience. That's why you see these places like Alamo and these places that make the experience unique. And they build communities And that's really the function for, that's really the main thing that all these theater groups need to do, is to build a community. Angelica has its community of fans. Alamo has its community of fans. You know, Landmark has its community of fans. You know, and that's what you need to do if you want to keep people coming in. And that's what's going to have to stay. They're going to be more exclusive of some of the things they do to appeal to that community of fans that they have. But theatrical's not going anywhere. Digital will be here, and digital has been here, and digital has gotten bigger year after year after year. We've had more dollar movies in the last 2 or 3 years than ever in the history of cinema. It's not going anywhere.
Right.
With all that said, Trolls World Tour is fine. It's not as good as the original, though. It's really not. And story,
yeah,
is the storylines. The story really expands on the Trolls world, which I think it's kind of cool. So now there's, instead of just the pop Trolls, which you heard singing the medley in that opening clip, they were doing that to try and win over the country music Trolls, which they had just met. Which I thought was kind of funny. One of them was voiced by Kelly Clarkson, future wife Kelly Clarkson, and there's a heavy metal trolls, and they're trying to take over all of the 6 troll villages and basically destroy them, and so that only hard rock music exists, and that's it. And that's the basic plot of it, and it's really straightforward. I mean, super straightforward. It's like a 90-minute movie. It doesn't take much. Kids will like it. It's colorful. It's got a lot of music, but, and yet not quite as much as the first movie. And it doesn't have that catchy song that Justin Timberlake had. I can't remember what it was called.
Can't stop the feeling,
which I really did like. That got an Oscar nomination too. It didn't have that kind of catchy song. It's fine. It's passable. It's funny. It's cute. And strangely enough, it has a pretty good message about community and coming together and looking past our differences. It's something that we really could use. I'm like, it's a happy movie. And who doesn't need a happy movie right now? I mean, maybe I give it some allowances because of that. But Trolls Tour, you could do worse than watching that this weekend.
For sure. And I mean, the Trolls, let's be honest, for its quote unquote intended audience, you know, my kids, for instance, watch Trolls about 1,643 times when it first came out. And then
so you should be
the
first to pay that $20 for Trolls World Tour.
Yeah, my kids also watched the Emoji Movie 37 times. So, you know, kids aren't too discerning when it comes to that. As long as you have some silly jokes and you have some colors, you know,
yeah.
And they've really helped me to learn to look past the deficiencies. And so I know it sounds silly, but, you know, something like Emoji Movie, which was widely regarded as the worst film of that year, you know, watching that over and over again with my kids, and you see the messages in it, you can appreciate it on the 14th viewing for its finer points than its colossal shittiness. But yeah, I mean, Trolls is a phenomenon. I still remember back when they first announced the first one, I was like, what? You know, they're making a Trolls movie. I mean, there was a long period of time where it seemed like we were getting news about movies like this, like Battleships. How are you gonna make Battleship movie? That one didn't work too well. But, you know, Trolls. And the point is they can, with the right writers and the right voice actors and the right idea, they can make any property an awesome property. And Trolls for kids has always been an awesome property. It's uplifting. It's got, you know, age appropriate comedy. It doesn't try to stretch the bounds too much. It's got and a good message above everything else. So that's on Trolls in general. I haven't seen World Tour, but I will.
Yeah. It seems like, We got to learn to make allowances for the simpleness of the messaging in these movies, and I'm not always great at that, honestly. But I also try to look at these things, and acknowledge doesn't necessarily work for me, but will work for somebody else. I think kind of how Trolls World Tour is, whereas, you know, the messaging to me is I mean, I get it, and it works. It's fine for right now. Overall, is it particularly developed? No, of course not. And it's the same way with another movie that I watched this week, which is the WWE Netflix movie, a kid who it's basically like Mike with wrestling. Like, that's what it is.
Okay, now I'm interested. Why didn't they put that on the poster?
They should have put that on the poster. It's like Mike with wrestling. But basically, it's about a 12-year-old kid, WWE fan, who finds a magical luchador mask, and it gives him powers, like superpowers. Mm-hmm. And so he uses those powers to join to enter a tournament to become a member of NXT, which is WWE's developmental territory. And so he wrestles all these adults, but he hides himself under the mask. And apparently, this is how stretched it is. Like the adults still don't recognize that he's a 12-year-old kid somehow. You know, it's like whatever.
mm-hmm.
But you're just supposed to look past that. But anyway, so he uses these powers to wrestle in the WWE, and that's the basic point. It's just like Mike, where the kid found sneakers and suddenly he became a b-ball star. So it's the same thing, and it's really simple. I ultimately did not land on the positive end of the main event as much as I wanted to, because I always give deference to WWE movies or wrestling movies when I can. And wrestling movies have been really good lately, with like the Peanut Butter Falcon and Fighting With My Family. I've had a couple really good ones. And the main event doesn't live up to that. He has like this whole side story with his family. You know, his dad is really played by Adam Pally, who I really like. And his grandma's played by Tichina Arnold, who I also really like. But the family stuff doesn't work as well as it should. And I was a little confused by the whole world of the main event, if I was honest, because sometimes it's like really real. Like the matches themselves are real. Like they're not scripted. So I'm like, okay, so in this world, there's no scripting of their matches. So, okay, so they're real fights.
You mean in the movie world, they're not scripted. So
in the world of the main event, right, the wrestling matches are real fights. And yet he still has superpowers. And some of the other wrestlers have superpowers too, like Otis, who wrestles in the WWE as a team called Heavy Machinery. He lets out a super fart that nearly blows everybody out of the theater. I know, it's like, okay. So I couldn't quite understand the world of it. And I also couldn't get beyond the fact that it reminded me so much of Marvel Comics when Spider-Man stars, one of the first things he did was he entered as a wrestler. Like he became a wrestler. And he used his phenomenal superpowers, like I can lift 10 tons superpowers to beat up people.
Right.
And that's what the kid does in this movie. And I couldn't get past it. And I was like, this is wildly unfair.
Right. I guess the most heartwarming thing about that whole thing to me is, and now I may be wildly inaccurate on this, but I've always felt like the WWE didn't pay enough homage or give enough respect to luchadors. The luchador is a huge thing in South America and Mexico. And
WWE doesn't like guys in masks. Unless you're Rey Mysterio, who was a legend. They have a few guys on the roster now who have masks on, but they're mostly mid-card to low mid-card guys. They do not like guys in masks because it's like you can't make stars out of guys in masks. It's almost like the way the NFL used to be, where it was hard to make stars because you had everybody in helmets all the time. It was easier to make stars out of NBA stars because you always saw their face. You know, so WWE, Vince McMahon doesn't really like guys in masks all that much. So you're right about that.
Well, it's good to see they're doing it in a movie, though. Did you see in that same vein, have you watched the Big Show show on Netflix?
I keep getting asked that question, and I have not seen a single frame of it. I'm almost scared to watch it. I don't know what it is other than it's a big show sitcom, which to me those words sound about as terrible as anything I could possibly think of. Because when I think about that, I just think of that movie Knucklehead that he did, which is just
it's somewhat close to that. It seems like I've read the synopsis, but the synopsis goes like this: it's basically the Big Show is retired from wrestling, and now he's got the biggest fight of his life, raising two teen girls or something like that. So it's essentially the Big Show, like the wrestling premise.
Actually, if they boiled it down to that premise I like.
Yeah.
That premise makes sense. The irony of all this is that the Big Show just wrestled for the World Championship less than a week ago. But whatever.
Right.
he is semi-retired.
I love the thought of, like, 'cause everybody, and now obviously this isn't the truth across the board, but the private lives of wrestlers can be somewhat tumultuous, as we've seen, you know, on the lower end, from Hulk Hogan's sex tape to the horrible end, like Chris Benoit's.
Anybody who's been watching Dark Side of the Ring for the last two seasons knows that wrestling has a very dark side.
Right. So to just see that Big Show's dark side is a colorful suburban home with two teenage girls. Oh, Dad. You know, it just trips me out to see.
I'm super curious about it now. I might watch an episode today just to give it a feel. See if it can be tolerated. Like, if I can.
You're going to keep getting asked about it, so.
I'm sure. I keep getting asked, so I feel like I ought to watch it. And I feel like I should watch it and then do a review of it. I really feel like I should. Because I've mm-hmm. things I've prided myself on is my coverage of all WWE product, like in terms of like movies and TV. Like, I cover most of it. I don't do the reality show stuff because that stuff's just crap and I won't watch it. But like, I review almost every WWE film that's ever been done. And
you weren't part of the reality show where they chose somebody for their somebody for their farm league. I don't know what it's called, but you didn't like that show.
That was tough enough. Those, where they did that. And they also, in NXT, when NXT first started, it was a competition show to decide who's going to be a next WWE superstar. It's since grown. It is the best wrestling territory that they have. It's better than their main roster shows. In fact, it is main roster now. NXT is basically main roster now. It's better than Raw and SmackDown combined. But that's another story. But no, I did not cover any of that crap either. Tough Enough was terrible too. It was really bad. It produced stars though. It produced stars, legitimate stars. So I mean, it
wasn't the Miz the result of one of those.
Or
no,
I believe
Miz
he was.
Real World,
yeah,
right?
And his he went from the Real World. Maybe it was Road. He went from Road Rules to WWE. I think it was Tough Enough that got him in there. In fact, it was. And his wife, Maurice, was also. Enough.
Wait, his wife's name is Maurice?
His name Maurice. M-A-R-Y-S-E. Why? Yeah.
Oh.
M-A-R-Y-S-E.
Maurice might be the least attractive name for a woman I've ever heard.
You should go look her up. She's stunning. And she's one
doing
of my
that
favorite.
As we speak.
She's one of my favorite wrestlers too, back when she came out. Because she's French, so she's really, you know, had a really cocky attitude. She's just a bitch. She was great at it. Great at it.
That's funny.
And they met in WWE, and when they became a couple on screen, I was like, uh-oh, they must be dating in real life. That's usually how things work out.
Right.
Damn, that's exactly what ended up happening. They got married.
Yep. Well, I mean, you have two, you know, fit people hanging out that closely for a long time. That's going to be bound to happen.
Did you look her up?
I'm trying to now, but I looked up Maurice by accident again.
Yeah.
Maurice.
M-A-R-Y-S-E.
Oh, I was way off. And you already spelled it. Y-S-E. All right. Maurice Ollet. Oh, yeah.
Yep, Maurice Ollet.
Oh, yeah. She's a looker.
Yeah.
She's scary looking, too. She looks like she could fight. I'll be here for a while. You go ahead with the show.
Yeah, he got lucky on that one.
I mean, yeah. But in the movie world, other than main event, so I sat down last night. We were talking about streaming movies that are streaming when they would usually be theatrical. And I came across with some of the darkness, which here's the biggest problem with straight to streaming releases.
Which
they
you
don't
have
the market
for Alexander Daddario, just like I do. So I'm very curious to hear about this movie.
Oh, 110%. And she scares me a bit after this, but the marketing for straight to streaming doesn't seem to be down pat yet. Like, you'll never see a TV commercial or YouTube commercial or something that's coming to streaming, really. You'll see trailers, but not like the TV spots. And I guess that's part of the idea that they don't want to spend as much money on marketing. But the end result is you'll know something's coming out, but unless you find an actual release date, if you go looking for a release date, you don't really know when it's hitting streaming. So I'll be going through the list of what's new and eventually come across something like this. So We Summon the Darkness is basically, you remember in the 80s, the Satanic Panic?
Oh, yeah.
And so there was this time for our younger listeners or those who don't remember, there was this time in the 80s where all of middle America pretty much thought that satanic cults were operating under the surface and they were running daycares and they were murdering people and virgin sacrifices and dogs and cats living together, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they swore that was really happening. Obviously it wasn't, but, and we've seen kind of a influx of movies dealing with this kind of thing. One of them was actually called Satanic Panic. And I love it because there's one of my favorite subgenres of horror movie is having to do with cults and satanic stuff. It's just, I don't know what makes them so good, but this one stars Alexandra Daddario and her friends. They're very 80s names. Alexis, Val, and Bev are heading out to a heavy metal concert.
They sound like Archie characters.
Yeah, exactly. And essentially, while they're going to this heavy metal concert, you find out there's been a rash of serial killings that are left up to look like a satanic cult did it. And they go to this concert, they meet up with a group of boys, and then, you know, what happens after that. This is what I'm having a difficult time with, because I'm getting ready to write a review for this because I just saw it last night. And there is I don't know if it's a twist or not. It seemed like a twist to me, but I only watched one trailer, and it happens early in the movie, so it's not really hidden, but there's a twist to it. Have you watched the trailer for it?
Yes.
Okay, tell me what you think. How do they encounter the killers based on that trailer?
I imagine the killers are either the band that they go to see, hanging out with the band or something.
Right. Yeah. So I'm suffice it to say, I won't give too much plot details because it is kind of a cool thing, but it is a little too throwaway. It could have been a lot more. It could have been a lot more of a movie that stayed with you, but they kind of went cheesy on quite a few parts of it. But
I feel like the band are the killers. Daddario like lured her friends into their trap or something. Like, that's how I feel. Like, I could be wrong. That's how I feel watching the trailer.
You're close. You're somewhat close. But you know, there's a really cool twist in it. And this is one of those movies that would really kind of piss off religious groups, I think, and for no real reason. But it's actually really fun. You get to see a different side of Alexandra Daddario. But everybody else in it, Johnny Knoxville has a great cameo part as a one of these fire and brimstone evangelical preachers, pastors, which, by the way, he used to look like a leading man. He used to look like, you know, I don't think women would ever actually say he was, you know, the world's sexiest man, but he was, you know, normal, good-looking dude. He could be a leading man in the movie, but the poor fella didn't age well. He shows up and he looks like a skeleton, man. He looks like a walking corpse. But I've always liked Knoxville, but the movie's fun. It's definitely worth the $6 you'll pay to rent it. It's actually you can buy it for $9.99 as well, which I bought it because I was like, what's $3? Then I kind of regretted it afterwards because it's not a movie I'd really watch again. But
that's, yeah. I don't know if that's one you guys really need to own.
Yeah, I figured that would be a good enough review for it. Is that, you know, I bought it and I kind of regretted it. I'm not going to watch it again, but it was worth a $6 rental. I'd say you got you. And,
sure
and for
sure
no other reason.
I'm sure they requested your quote on that one. I
right.
bought it. I kind of regret it. did they ask, for your quote? Did they ask your quote
right.
permission for that one?
I rent it. I wouldn't buy it. and this is the time in the show where we get to John's weekly misogynistic moment. One of the nice things about it is Alexandra Daddario is wearing this kind of reserved outfit, but there's peaks of things here and there, and it's marvelous. It's marvelous.
Nice.
I got to tell you. She's
one of those people. She's one of those people that I really want to interview.
Yeah.
Staring, and I don't want to be creepy.
Yeah,
but
I
know
definitely
because I know her eyes are so goddamn blue. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
no,
you get lost in them.
When I remember when we interviewed Vera Farmiga for Higher Ground, and
yeah.
I just like I stared at her blue eyes the entire time, and I know it had to have been creepy.
Well, I can't trust myself with that. I've had a weird. I've interviewed a lot of people I admire and people I'm huge fans of, but they've all been guys. I've never really interviewed a lot, and I think that's because of the no fly list I'm on with because of that what happened that one time with Jessica Alba. I mean, geez, it was an accident.
Of course, yeah.
But no, I'm totally kidding about that. We've already painted a picture of me. I don't want that to be part of it.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would do well in an interview with her just because I would get too lost and caught up in my words. And we just I did an interview with Chantel Van Santin at the end of last year for their Apollo show that was on Apple Plus. And even that, I was kind of like way too aware of myself and what I was saying. And she's not even that big of a name. So I'll let you take that one when we get Alexandra to call in. So
yeah, no, I'll definitely take it. I'll need to be careful. I'll just put it that way. all right, let's talk about some other things that are going on here. I had a whole bunch of things that I wanted to talk about, and I don't know if we'll talk about them or not. We're actually 37 minutes in, but it looks like we're going to get some news on Comic-Con in the next few days. A lot of people, me included in that, who've been waiting to see if Comic-Con is going to get canceled this summer. I think it will be canceled. It sounds like they're edging towards canceling now. They're trying to figure out what kind of impact that's going to have, like liability, you know, if it gets canceled, you know, and what the financial impacts
right.
are going to be. But I you know, there's been a couple stories on Comic-Con this week, and both times that I've written about it, I've said the same thing. I'm like, I don't, as someone who's gone to Comic-Con many years in a row, I don't see any possible way you can hold Comic-Con this summer. And even if you did, I wouldn't go. And I don't know anybody who would. But even more than that, even more than just the logistical aspect of it, the fact is you're cramming in 150,000 people into the convention center and its surrounding area. Comic-Con is a dismal, unsanitary place under the best of circumstances. It's not great.
You
can always come back with a flu of some kind from Comic-Con. Same way I always come back from the flu from like Sundance or something, but it's worse at Comic-Con. You definitely can't do it now. But more than that, the economy's in the crapper. We're going to have like 30% unemployment in this place before long, if we don't already. Nobody is going to be able to afford to go to Comic-Con and go there and spend $200, $300 on exclusives and pay for expensive hotels because they're all expensive there. There's not a single one that isn't. Pay for flights, for anything. Comic-Con is the kind of expense no one is going to be able to afford in the depression that we're going to face coming out of this pandemic. It just makes no sense.
I feel like I should apologize to everyone because this is clearly, this whole thing is my fault. I finally started saving up to actually go to Comic-Con this year. So the universe is against me.
The one time you were going to go, and it's going to get canceled.
So this is all my fault, folks. I'm sorry. I'll never say about
that. I didn't even think about that. I had just finished. It was just actually not that long ago. I had finalized who we were going to be sending. It was me, you, and my friend Karen Peterson, who helped us out at Comic Con last year. And I was like, I'm doing this, and I don't even think they're going to have it.
Yeah. Yeah. No studio is going to send anything there.
No studio is going to send a movie
reasons.
There. There are no movies to send. And you think Warner Brothers is going to send Gal Gadot in the middle of in the middle of Comic Con right now? I mean, no way in hell.
No. I mean, the only good reason to have Comic Con would be to test the efficacy of the vaccine. Because if there's any chance of it coming back out, it would be in that mess. Because not only is it all, like you mentioned, it's not only is it all those people one place, but it's the bottom 1% of hygienic people in the country in that room at the same time.
If you put the vaccine in the nachos or in the Starbucks Frappuccinos. We'll know.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll have a pretty good test case whether or not that shit works.
Right, exactly. But I mean, the more important part that, I'm joking and I'm serious about that. I mean, because it's funny, you know. Oh yeah, the nerds aren't hygienic, but it's also true. So that's a bad thing to have about now. And then the other part, the part that people would actually care about from a business standpoint is what you mentioned, and that's something we haven't thought about as fans, I'm sure, but the businesses have is nobody's got money to spend on this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, so it's better to just put it off.
That's the big thing for me. Looking beyond just the business is that Comic-Con is just one of those frivolous things that no one is going to be able to afford right now. Right. Of course, there'll be some people who will go no matter what. Those people probably aren't hurting right now anyway. Your vast majority of people are not going to be able to afford something like Comic-Con right now. And I don't know when the next big thing is that's going to take place as it normally would. I don't know if they're going to do that for the rest of the year. I think we'll probably see some fall festivals that may still happen, but they're going to be like hybrids, like maybe a couple of screenings live, but then the rest will be online. Like they're going to be something else. They're not going to be what they normally would have been. I'm serious when I say that. I think Sundance was the first and last major event of the year to run normal. Like the first and last like festival/convention thing to run as it was meant to. 2020
is a punt at this point.
2020 is a loss for a lot of things. Sports, TV, film, business, Jesus, the employment, everything. It's just a lost year. And I don't know when it's going to get back on its feet. I really don't. It sucks, sad. It just is what it is.
And this kind of goes into what we started the show out with is it's going to be really interesting to see the new normal when everything gets back together, because all of these things, that companies put together, these big expensive festivals they put on, or the way they put them on, because they thought they had to. And as they venture out to trying some of this remote stuff, it'll be interesting to see the hybrid they come up with afterwards, because they'll obviously go back to having the live events, because those local economies depend on them. But they'll also see an opportunity to bring in more people by doing some more of this stuff online.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm very curious to see what they end up saying in a few days. I have a feeling they're going to make an announcement this upcoming week. Whole bunch of remake stuff this week, which is just weird. Remakes and reboots this week, just a lot of them. And I think partially it's because there aren't a lot of new productions. There's no productions going on anywhere right now. And there's not a lot of like casting news or anything like that. I know, because I spend my day trying to find stuff to post on the site. It's a lot of remake and reboot stuff. So the Hellraiser movie that we knew that we learned about last year with David Goyer, that's moving forward. And then they've added the guys who did The Night House, which was one of the biggest films at Sundance this year. It's a horror film with Rebecca Hall, and it got bought, I think, by Searchlight. So I've never been a huge fan of Hellraiser. So I don't really care all that much other than the talent involved with it.
Yeah. I mean, Hellraiser is obviously
Pinhead doesn't do much for
movie,
me,
but it's not on the top of my list of things to watch. It was overly gory. I mean, the one thing I will give it is that the Cenobites, what's the word I'm looking for? Their contribution to horror iconography in the Cenobites are really cool characters.
Yes.
So I'd like to see something done with them, but I hope it's not just a straight remake. I hope it's more of a reimagining, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's probably what they're going to do. I'm looking forward to, though, is Salem's Lot. They're doing a remake of Salem's Lot. James Wan is producing it, and it's Mike Flanagan, the guy who did the Annabelle movies and It, and wrote It.
Oh, right.
He's going to be writing and directing it. And I dig Salem's Lot. Salem's Lot is one of my favorite Stephen King joints. The one where the guy comes back home, Jerusalem's Lot, which is his childhood hometown, and finds that everybody's been turned into vampires. Been adapted a lot. I think Toby Hooper did one in, I think, 1979. And then there was a bad sequel version, I think, in the 80s. And then they had another one in the 2000s. I can't remember who was in that one. They might have been Rob Lowe.
It was Rob Lowe and Andre Brower, whoever it was Captain Hope from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, wasn't it?
Yeah, Andre Brower.
I didn't
always
the original was 1979.
Yeah, that thing has a Toby Hooper joint.
TV series. Yeah,
the Toby Hooper joint. But yeah, so I'm really curious about that one though. Salem's Lot is a really good film. Do you ever see Salem's Lot or read the book?
Sadly, I did. I started listening to the audiobook because they talked about a remake of this last year at some point. And after I saw it, I realized I hadn't seen the show, and I figured I'd read the book first. And I got about 4 chapters in, and then I think I went on to something else. But I've always wanted to. I mean, the Nosferatu type vampires has always been something that draws me into it.
Another remake that's happening that I don't want to get upset over because this is one of my favorite movies ever. But it's The Night of the Hunter, which is the 1955 film with Robert Mitchum. Iconic. One of the best villain performances ever as Harry Powell. Just sort of con man, preacher/killer by Harry Powell. Go to her kids at $10,000 that is missing. Fantastic movie. Incredible performance by Robert Mitchum. And that's getting remade by Sony producer Amy Pascal and the guy who wrote Operation Finale, which was a decent movie. This movie's going to live and die by who plays Harry Powell. And
yeah.
it's a role that demands you be shady, also charming. You have to be both.
Right.
And I was thinking Tom Hardy or Josh Brolin. Those are the two I threw in there in the post, was Tom Hardy and Josh Brolin. But you have to have that.
Ooh, I
balance.
Think Josh Brolin's probably picked. Tom Hardy's a good pick too. I don't know if he could get the lighter side of that or not. But because I'm trying to think of something that Tom Hardy showed that side in. But
Inception.
Because even when he's Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I think everybody should know, if you don't know Night of the Hunter, you should know its most famous contribution to pop culture is the tattooing of love and hate across your knuckles.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Such a great character.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to say, it's probably one of the reasons why you haven't seen it remade a ton either. It's an iconic performance. And I don't want to see it messed around. 65
years.
Yeah. I don't want to see it messed around. But at the same time, I'm curious to see what could be done with it now. Like, I feel like this movie could be really good, contemporary style. Like, it could still be really good.
Well, I think that should be one of the reasons that something like this, I'm not as hesitant to see it remade. Because if you're remaking something that's 60 years old, you don't have to... You know, there's a much more wide range of places that you could update it for a contemporary setting. Things are not the same now as they were in 1955, obviously. So,
right.
You know, you could keep all the same characters, the same storyline, but just the simple inclusion of a modern day setting is enough to change it drastically.
Right. Very curious about that one. I'm going to be following that one very closely. My favorite Disney animated movie is getting a remake for Disney Plus, and it's Robin Hood. The one where he was
the
fox.
Robin Hood.
Yeah, the Fox Robin Hood. It was my favorite as a kid growing up. I watched the movie. I listened to the album. I love Robin Hood. It's going to be going to Disney Plus, CG live action, which I don't like. I prefer to get just with animation.
The most disturbing thing about that, I loved that one as well, but I cannot look at it the same way now because I stumbled across an article a couple months back that detailed how that Robin Hood is a tentpole movie in the furry community. Like, that's how a lot of furries first realized they were furries.
Geez.
Looking at Robin Hood, the sexy fox.
God, I don't even want to think about that. But the guy who's going to be directing it is is Carlos Lopez Estrada, who did Blindspotting a couple years ago, which I'm very interested in seeing what he would do with it, because there's a musical, and this will be too. So he might be able to do. He did some great stuff, comedy and spoken word in Blindspotting. So I'm curious. And it's written by the person who wrote Lady and the Tramp for Disney Plus last year. So, I mean, it's pretty much staying in the same wheelhouse for that person. So, but I don't want to see CD live action. The live action suggests to me that there's going to be humans in it. I don't want humans in it. I don't want humans anywhere near it. It should be all animals. And I don't know why you need to do CG for it. Just do a Pixar style animated movie or something, or a Frozen style animated movie. Why do the CG live action? I don't get it. I think it takes away from the sort of whimsicalness of having anthropomorphic animals as legendary figures. It doesn't need any more. You already got animals playing legendary figures. Why do you need more?
Yeah.
Why do you need to mess with it more? It's already whimsical enough. Why add this to it and take that away? I don't get it. I don't get it.
And you know, one of those human figures, James Marsden. Got to be
James Marsden.
Always is.
James Marsden will somehow end up on a road trip with like Friar Tuck or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And James Marsden will be beleaguered the entire time.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think you know, you can remake and redo these movies, but I think a medium change is really out of the question, especially for these classic ones. I mean, there's no need that the human live action or the live action animation hybrid should be reserved just for very specific things like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit situation.
Right, I totally agree. And the last thing on my list I want to get your opinion on was this new Doogie Howser show that they're doing, which is also going to Disney Plus. Doogie Howser for me, like, I liked Doogie Howser back then. I think it started in 1989, so I was 12 years old. It's the show that made Neil Patrick Harris a star. He played a teenage kid who was also a genius and a doctor. And it ran for 4 seasons. It got canceled in 1993, but it was a phenomenon for a while. And when you hear people refer to someone as Doogie, it's because of this show. Neil Patrick Harris built his career in this show, and he still references it all the time. So they're doing a new version it's from one of the writers of Fresh Off the Boat. She's from Hawaii. So the character, it's going to be a multiracial girl. I think she's going to be half Asian, half white or something like that. And it has a different name too, but I don't remember what it was. It doesn't matter. But basically it's Doogie Howser. And you know, I don't have any like super fondness for Doogie Howser. Like I liked it, and then it went away, and I didn't care. But it was just kind of it. I always liked the show ABC tried to copy it with like immediately after, which was Phenom. You remember that show?
Not until you just said the name, but as soon as you said the Phenom, name, it sprung to my head. Yeah,
Phenom was their clear attempt to hold on to Doogie Howser magic. It's because it started like in 1993, like the same year that Doogie Howser got canceled, and it was about a young girl who was a tennis phenom. So it was trying to hold on to that magic, and it lasted for one season. It didn't work. But I like that show for some reason. I don't know why. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I guess, you know, it's been 30 years since Doogie Howser was on. I mean, it's a neat concept. It's just, it is one that's kind of hard to make continually interesting. Because once you get over the initial, he's young, he's smart. How many times can you do the, are you here for career day joke, you know, when the doctor comes in or something like that? Yeah, as long as they can keep it going, why not? I'm neither here nor there on it.
Yeah. And that's pretty much all I had for this week, man. You have anything else that you want to talk about?
Just that, you know, Artemis Fowl is being, I don't think we talked about it last week, is now going directly to Disney Plus. So that'll be neat to see. They're just foregoing the entire box office, take.
But yeah, I'm very curious about Artemis Fowl going straight to Disney Plus. That's a big move by Disney. And they said that there's going to be more movies that might be going straight to digital too.
Do you think it's just them cutting their losses because they think it sucks? Or
I think they're cutting their losses. I don't know how well that movie would have done in theaters anyway. Whenever I see these movies now, I immediately think Ender's Game. Like
yeah,
I immediately think it's
disappointment.
Now. Yeah, I immediately think all these movies
disappointment.
All these movies that try to be the next Harry Potter, I think Ender's Game, and I think Artemis Fowl might have ended up being like that, like a movie that you think is going to be huge because the books were huge. No, Harry Potter was a thing that captured something, and they're holding on to it themselves with Fantastic Beasts, and they aren't really speeding as well as they did before. Anything new that tries to come in and be the next Harry Potter, everything has failed.
Yeah, I mean, they need to realize that it's the hot property, the super famous YA novel is only one part of that equation. You got to have the other 16 parts that it takes to make a Harry Potter. You got to have the perfect cast, the perfect timing, the perfect writers, the perfect director. All that stuff needs to happen.
Yep.
It's not just the source material.
Exactly. Yes, I think they're cutting their losses. They might do better. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what they do. We'll see how Artemis Fowl does. I don't know. All right. Well, that about wraps up the show. We got like a minute left on the show. God, that flew by. I was actually thinking we were going to do a really quick show this weekend. Of course, it didn't happen. 90 seconds. But I'm Travis Hobson. That is John Nolan. We are the Punch Drunk Critics. You can find us every single day at punchdrunkcritics.com. You can find me on Twitter at punchycritic. He is at punchdrunkjohn. You can find Punch Drunk Critics on Twitter as well at PD's Movies. And that's it. I don't know what we got for next week. What is next week? Is there anything big that, that was supposed to come out next week?
They're supposed to come out, maybe, but I don't know. It's going to be kind of a week by week thing, but we'll be here every week that we can to talk about whatever we can.
Yeah, I don't think there's any big movies next week, because I think, well, Sailor and the Spades, my review of that is already up on punchdrunkcritics.com. You can read it there. So I don't know. That might be the biggest movie of next week, at least until Extraction comes out the week after with Chris Hemsworth. I'm very curious to talk about that one. Right, that's it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Cinema Royale. We will see you soon. Later, John.
Later. See you.
Later.